You're listening to Shift in Action, a program of wisdom media and spirited exchange offered through the Institute of Noetic Sciences. For more information, visit www.shiftinaction.com.
I want to welcome everyone to Shift in Action. Tonight we are continuing our series with Catherine Austin Fitz, which has been a response to some of the economic tumult, but we've long been a fan of Catherine's. She's been an insider on Wall Street and in the political arena, and now she's gone on to create a remarkable synthesis of understanding of markets as well as shifting to local economies and creating new investment vehicles that really create healthier investment flows for us. And we began to get a taste of all of that work last week from the very big picture analysis of what's broken with the larger systems as well as some of the opportunities that to shift things in a more positive direction. And this week we're going to be going deeper into financial permaculture, which is an intriguing term, first of all, and a kind of an emerging field that's that we're going to hear a lot more about and that, Catherine, you're midstream in a workshop with. So thank you for joining us again tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm in Hohenwald, Tennessee, which is about 80 miles south of Nashville. And there's a surprising number of people, Stephen, from the Bay Area. So we feel like we've attracted some of the East Coast and the West Coast to Hohenwald for this unbelievably interesting five-day conference. So let me start. I think last week I told the red button story. Am I not correct?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
Actually.
Well, in the red button story, I asked an audience of people in the summer of 2000 if they would push a button on the lectern. It was a red button that would stop all hard narcotics trafficking in their community and country tomorrow. But in a way that would then cause severe disruptions in the financial system, and only one person out of 100 would push the button. Well, when I first got to Hohenwald on the first night, we had a presentation on something called financial ecosystems, which is how to see and understand and map out the financial ecosystem in your place or the financial systems. And so I asked an audience of about 130 people how many would push the red button, and I want you to know, for the first time in my life, Stephen, everyone would push the button, 100%.
Oh, really? So this is the workshop for button pushers.
So I said...
People are willing to go down the rabbit hole.
Well, they're willing to do whatever they have to do to turn it green.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I always say that because... You know, if you can turn the red button green, then you can make money pushing the red button, which means you can make it. Yeah. Anyway, so it was very exciting for me because that's the first time in my life. I know I was up at Bioneers in Alaska, and we got 50% of the audience to push the red button. So, you know, we've got the I would say that we've got a group of the early adapters. Anyway, the early adapters. And let me just mention before I start to tell you a little bit about financial permaculture. We have a website for the event, which is financialpermaculture.com, and then we're blogging the event at financialpermaculture.org, and then Solari, which is one of the sponsors, has we're blogging at solari.com/blog. So for anybody who's online, you can start to plug in and read all about it. But let me first tell you how the history of how this came about. There's a group in Tennessee known as The Farm. They have a website, thefarm.org, and it's a group of people who left San Francisco in the 70s and referred to themselves at the time as hippies and came and started an intentional community in Lewis County. Hohenwald is the county seat of Lewis County. And so they've been there for many years and have done incredible things as an intentional community. They've made an incredible contribution to this county. And one of the things they have is something called the Echo Village Training Center, which was founded and led by Albert Bates. And then another thing called the Leadership School, which was founded by Thomas Huff, both founders of the farm. And Albert, through the Echo Village Training Center, has co-located a program from Gaia University, which is a university, a permaculture sort of inspired university coming out of the UK. And so you have all these fantastic young people. I used to work on Wall Street, and one of the incredible things about Wall Street is we would just attract all these fabulous young people, you know, sort of the best and the brightest of a generation in each year. Well, the farm has been doing that here in Tennessee at the Echo Village Training Center. So those are a couple of threads. And one of the students who just graduated from Guy University at the Echo Village Training Center is a woman named Jennifer English, who started a group called the Center for Holistic Ecology, and their mission is to really help build a green entrepreneurship and green development in the mid-Tennessee area. Well, anyway, I've been in cahoots with all these folks, and Jennifer got me to come over and speak at a wonderful event here locally about sometime this summer. And who should we get into cahoots with? But I went over to the Chamber of Commerce to make a presentation, and there was a wonderful group of local leaders interested in sort of developing the green economy there, including the new president of the Chamber of Commerce. And to make a long story short, the next thing you know, we found the most amazing groups of people coming together. So it was a group of permaculturalists and people involved in intentional community, the local leadership of the Chamber of Commerce and the Christian community, a very Christian focus here in Hohenwald, and then, of course, the Solari Money people. And we really enjoyed talking to each other. We really sort of enjoyed being in cahoots, but we didn't understand each other's language. If you can, I'm sure you're not surprised.
This begs for a movie to be made about it.
Well, I think there's a movie being made over, you know, as we speak.
I think it's so beautiful. It really is. It's like so many of the tectonic plates that are grinding against each other in American culture, you're really successfully bringing them together.
Yeah. Well, it's really kind of a miracle. Anyway, so we said, you know, we all want, you know, the thing we share, the thing we have in common is we all want wonderful communities. I'll never forget. Did you ever know of Jim Rouse and the Enterprise Foundation?
No.
Ever heard that name? Jim Rouse created an intentional community in Maryland, Columbia, Maryland, many years ago. And when I was the Assistant Secretary of Housing, one of the advantages of my position is you could call up guys like Jim Rouse and get to know them. And when Jim Rouse he was head of the Rouse Company at the time, brought together all sort of the greatest minds in the country to design Columbia, he put forward a design question for them. And what he said was, he said, we're here today to design a community, and the question we must answer is, how would we create a community where people are free to love one another? And so the thing that all these different people had in common was that's what they're interested in figuring out. But in a very real way, the folks at the farm are very grounded in sort of creating real businesses and doing real things. They're very active in a whole variety of sort of efforts. You know, Katrina happened. They send a group of people down. And anyway, so they're unbelievably grounded and very practical. So Jennifer had been planning on a green business development course, and so she said, let's expand it and get the permaculturalists and the local leadership from the chamber and Solari and, you know, sort of the money people, and let's spend 5 days seeing if we can invent a series of businesses for Hohenwald that would also, as we're doing that, help us to integrate permaculture principles and finance people and get to the point. One of our goals was at the end of the 5 days, the permaculture people and the financial people would be able to understand at least 4 sentences of the other, because a lot of it, you know, is, Stephen, is just understanding the terminology and the sort of process methodology. So we did surveys of the Hohenwald community, and we said, what green businesses, and our definition for green was no waste. Green equals no waste. So what businesses could we create that would help reduce waste in a way that would be profitable that you would like to see created here in Hohenwald? And so we had these 3 meetings, and what came out was, number one was green incubation. There's tremendous interest in an incubator. And number two was natural home building. Number three was a food co-op and a community kitchen where you could do value-added sort of products. And then the third was ethanol. And what we were able to do in some of these tracks, most of the tracks, was literally find just world-class people who were just rocking in each one of these areas. And they came to Hohenwald to lead design teams drawn from the audience of about 90 registrants from around the country, who are now designing out all of these different businesses. We've been in design all day yesterday and today. And tomorrow we're gathering the four design teams to present our preliminary business plans to a group of the local and state leaders from both Hohenwald and Lewis County and the Nashville area to judge these four different presentations. So
wow.
It's
and
it's been
looking to get these funded and have them operational business.
No, I don't think so. Well, it's interesting. 25% of our audience, and again, we've got people from New York, people from the Bay Area, people from Hohenwald. Just we have 34 different states represented in a group of about 90 registrants. What's amazing, 25% of the folks have permaculture background, 25% have business, and there's a very significant experience in both. 25% have both, and then 25% are just, you know, something else or just very young. For example, wonderful young man who I've been helping mentor, including helping him with one of his senior homeschooling projects. He's a very successful surfer from Santa Cruz, California. So you have an incredible diversity of people of all different generations and many different backgrounds, and they're all here absolutely convinced that we as a society are at a crossroads and we have to invent it ourselves. We can't wait for anybody else. We can't wait for the government. So we've got 130 committed red button pushers here doing their best to figure it out.
That's great. So I'm curious, like financial permaculture, even as a title, is very intriguing because you're just blending two worlds that have really been seen as completely separate from each other. So what are some of the key insights that have kind of crossed the divide from, say, the permaculture world into the financial world and then vice versa as a result?
Well, I think there have been so many ahas, but one of the first has been that it is really important to map the systems within a place. And just as permaculture teaches us to map the cultural systems or the natural resource systems, what Solari is saying is we also need to map the financial systems and find a way, which we don't know how to do. I mean, that's one of the reasons we're together, find a way to integrate our understanding of the financial ecosystems with the cultural and natural ecosystems and start to build alignments so that we can start shifting the investment and resources within a place to work in alignment and to have the incentive systems. There's been a lot of conversation about incentive systems. How do we get the financial incentive systems working in alignment with the cultural and natural systems? So, I'll give you an example. I talk a lot about the fact that people can make money on corporate stocks going up, so you get a capital gain from a corporate stock going up. And more often than not, because corporations are not place-based, that means if corporations rape places, they can make money and their stock goes up. Whereas, you know, what I'm very interested in is how can we build a way of financing communities so that people can align how they make money on their investments with doing that which makes communities healthy and beautiful. And in fact, if you there's a series of different things you can do. So, in fact, those incentive systems can come much more into alignment, and everybody in the community can benefit from doing those things that support and help making the community a much more wonderful place and economically viable place to be. So one is simply the importance of mapping and understanding the systems around you, whether it's natural, cultural, or financial. A second, it's funny, I just left a fantastic presentation that Andy Langford, who's one of the co-founders of Guy University, was making with Albert Bates on transition towns. And Andy did the calculations and estimated that 60% of the children in the Southeast United States, after they grow up or go to college, leave, and a portion of them come back. In fact, it's higher here than in most places. And he calculated how much it costs to raise these kids and educate them, and then how much sort of economic activity they generated when they left. And what he calculated was that every year Hohenwald and Lewis County was losing $8.5 million by having the best and the brightest leave. And one of the questions he was asking is, how can we make our communities much more exciting and vibrant for our young people? How can we educate them in local communities? And then how can we create opportunities, including financial opportunities for them, you know, in the local communities, and not simply watch the best and the brightest leave? And was really talking about the brain drain here in the United States and all around the world.
So a transition town becomes a sort of a new model that's more attractive for those people to stay and continue to do business and create enterprises,
right,
and raise their families.
One of the reasons I've always wanted to see venture funds and incubators and data banks happen within communities is because one of the reasons a corporate stock will trade at a much higher value, sort of price-earnings ratio than a small business, there are many reasons, but one of them is if the chairman of a large company dies, the shareholders assume, you know, there's 20 other guys who can take that position, whereas your local small business doesn't have that kind of deep bench of talent. And if you had cross-cutting efforts, you know, between small business and small enterprise in communities, you could start to have internship and apprentice programs and cross-cutting programs that would allow you. For example, when I first went to Wall Street, in my first job, I was allowed to move from department to department to department and really develop lots of different kinds of skills and work with lots of different kinds of people. Imagine a town where the local venture fund could finance you know, young people staying and internshipping at lots of different businesses so that they really learned the different businesses in the community and could earn equity and stock options in the venture fund that was pooling and financing a lot of the different businesses. So when you do these kinds of cross-cutting things, there is a lot more money that can be invested in building up the human resources. And in fact, if you do it properly, business has shown for many generations, it, you know, it well done, it always pays.
So it seems like one of the big principles is you're replicating some of the big financing infrastructures on a smaller scale locally, so that people can actually do that in a way that doesn't drain resources towards the big
material. Right. Well, what you're trying to do is you're trying to reduce waste. You're trying to optimize equity, whether it's living equity or financial equity. Because ultimately, if your living equity isn't healthy, your financial equity won't, because all financial equity comes from living equity. You know, no harvest, no topsoil, no rain, no humans. So you're trying to build the alignments and the intimacy so that appreciation and those feedback loops are much more clear and much tighter, so that a lot of the terrible things that go on in this planet, there's an incentive for them not to go on. But, you know, the way you have to do that is sort of one family, one person, one family, one household at a time. Now, we know that technology, Stephen, should advantage the small guy, not the big guy. And yet we've watched information and telecommunications technology do the opposite. I'll give you a perfect example. I may have told this story last week. It's one of my favorite, about the three women in Tennessee who realized their relationship with the New York bank. Did I tell you that one?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. So here we have three women sitting in Tennessee who two women are earning 4% by giving their capital to the large New York bank, and their best friend is borrowing it back for 23%, and they don't even know it, and they've got a huge financial institution, you know, 1,500 miles away in the middle of them and just draining off huge amounts of their money. And they're missing an incredible opportunity, and they don't know it. Now, look at information technology. Is there any reason, given the tools available to us, that that should be happening in a community? I mean, another perfect example. When I was Assistant Secretary of Housing, I did an analysis that showed that when a lot of the big programs that HUD had started, 70% of the money that went into a community went to somebody who lived in that community for some purpose in that community. By the time I became commissioner, my estimate was 29% went into the community, and the rest went to intermediaries. Now, with information technology, how can that possibly still exist? So we've used technology to centralize instead of to decentralize. So the question is, how can we reverse that and make sure the small guy gets the benefit of what's possible with network technology?
So as part of what you're really attempting to do in Hohenwald here is demonstrate how a whole community can adopt these principles and start to move the needle in the positive direction again.
Well, what we're essentially doing is we're doing a prototyping simulation where we're saying, okay, you know, we have all these tools in permaculture and finance and in local leadership and small business. How, you know, the world is changing dramatically. How can we use these principles? And, you know, in permaculture, the permaculturalists tell me all problems are an opportunity. So the key is to define any problem not as a problem but an opportunity. So how can we view what's happening in the financial system and what's happening in the economy as an opportunity to significantly shift to a culture which is much happier and a financial system which is much more in harmony with the natural resources and one that really provides in an abundant fashion for the people of this planet.
Beautiful.
It was great. One of the things we had today, we have all these little assignments, but one of the things today we had to estimate was how much money our presence had put into the local economy, and then what the multipliers were, and if you had a multiplier that drained the money out of the community really fast, how much less of the GNP we generated than if we had a sort of, you know, in permaculture, how you slow the water down in a piece of land. Well, this is how you slow the money down going through the economy. The other thing is we had to calculate what our waste was. It's very funny. And what things we could do in the future as we traveled to reduce our footprint on the earth. So that was fun. We also had a very exciting presentation. There's a group at one of the Hopi Indian reservations in Arizona. The young people have gotten together to do a permaculture program, and so their representative got up and gave a presentation, and Albert blocked it. What's been happening is at all the different presentations and workshops, and then for the different teams, because the teams work on their business plans, but then we get together and have cross-cutting sort of presentations. And the Guy University students will blog it so that our theory was, you know, maybe 90 registrants could take 5 days off and come to Hohenwald, but not everybody can do that. And so we thought, well, let's do everything we can to get people to come in virtually. And so we've been blogging it on the Solari blog, and all the Guy University students have been blogging it. And just so many cool ideas have come up. Let me, can I tell you about the food guys?
Sure.
Okay. There are two people. One was from Athens, Georgia. He has locallygrown.net, Eric Waldman. And then Bob Waldrop from Oklahoma City, who's got a food cooperative in Oklahoma. And both of them have created software systems for people to start food co-ops. Eric's system, you can go in and sign up, and wherever you are, use it. And, in fact, it was very exciting, and this is up on the blog. There was a group of somebody who knew someone in Australia wanted to do this, who put them, after they saw the locally grown system, put the guys in Australia onto it, who say that they're now going to use it, and that'll be their first Australia user. And then Bob's software is to create a membership co-op between the farmers and the consumers, and you can just go to his site and download it. So they're incredible tools. If a community is interested in organizing food, Bob put together a whole presentation on Lewis County and figured out that there was a $22 million food co-op that could happen just from using the software and organizing people. Now we'll see what they come out with in the business plan. They were having a huge brouhaha about whether they wanted to be a for-profit or not-for-profit. So, these are the governance issues that have to be worked out. But, you know, it's so, I'll give you another one. The head of the incubation team is Jonathan Cloud, who's from Fairleigh Dickinson University. He's got a green incubator up at Fairleigh Dickinson, and he's had extraordinary entrepreneurial experience, very, very capable, talented guy. And Debbie Landers, who's a wonderful leader in the local community here and is kind of a serial entrepreneur, started a school at her husband's church. And when a local restaurant was shut down, the church decided to buy a restaurant and sort of start a restaurant so that they could give jobs to all these employees. And she has now created a big association for church schools and homeschoolers called TANIS. Anyway, so she is the facilitator. Andy Langford is the permaculturalist. We have both a finance person and a permaculturalist on every team. And then the ethanol team is run by Luke. Well, it's a company that has been doing ethanol plants all over the world. Very intelligent, very capable, very practiced. In fact, I just put up a blog post about some of the things that were happening on the ethanol team when I sat in the other night. So you just, you know, you walk around this conference. Now, the thing I have to warn you, Stephen, is the permaculturalists work you very hard. So they've had us up at, you know, starting at 8 and we finish at 9 p.m. So we've been going sort of 13-hour days with breaks for lunch and dinner. But the conversation is so amazing and yeasty because you have so much knowledge in the room about all the different things that could really go into sort of creating a lot of economic value in a community, even under, you know, very difficult economic times like we're in and appear to be in for even more.
So kind of what the picture that comes to me is like this jigsaw puzzle that is, that is a healthy, local, green economy, and part of what you're doing is assembling all these pieces together, and they're starting to take new forms as they work off of each other.
Right. And it's
curious,
no,
like
it
for your
like
average listener who doesn't have access necessarily to all of this that's going on, what do you think are some of the key pieces that people can start in their local economies to bring in different pieces of this puzzle while also starting to build towards really that full picture that is starting
right
to emerge from home?
Well, here's the key. The key is you have to say, whatever I do, it has to give me energy. It has to be fun. Okay? So I'm going to work, or I'm going to budget some time to learn about and do those things that are give me energy. Now, give me energy could mean save me money, save me time, make me feel like I'm not alone, help me find good food, you know, help me get a new bank. It's really, you know, a lot of it is defining about what you value and what is of interest to you. One of the things we talked about last night is starting a celery circle. Have you and I ever talked about celery circles?
We have, but I don't think you talked much last week about
okay.
it, so it would be great to go into.
So a celery circle is 12 or fewer people, so it's a very small group of people you trust. And I always tell people, listen, don't worry if there is a conspiracy. If you're not in one, you need to start one. So yeah, you know, the idea is the pro-centralization team has their conspiracies, and the pro-decentralization team is now going to have our conspiracies, okay?
We've got more.
Exactly. You get the drift. So the idea of the Celery Circle is a financial action club. Okay, now when I say financial action club, I don't just mean money. I mean, you know, reducing your expenses, reducing your risk, okay. So the first thing you can do is you can just help each other understand your financial ecosystems and what they mean to you. So, for example, why are we all feeling so drained, and how does the financial system sort of trick us and drain us? And there are all sorts of things you can do from reading books together and listening to DVDs together. By getting together, you can have potluck dinners. You want to do it so that it really is energizing for you, so it's fun. You know, you have dinner. I have a group in Hardeman County where I live. We have sort of a sustainability potluck dinner. And once a month we get together and have dinner, and one person talks about something that will help all of us live more sustainably or teach all of us about, you know, the different sustainability knowledges that we have. And it's been amazing over about an 18-month period, sort of 18 dinners, how much I've learned and what it's inspired me to do that I would never, you know, I just would have thought it was too difficult if I had been not gotten a good kick and a good education from somebody in the group. So number one is education and just sort of helping each other understand the environment, what it means to me, and what I can start to do with help from everyone else in the group to organize, to protect myself, and to better advantage myself. So one is education. Two is taking action. So, for example, a lot of people know I'm constantly recommending to find a good local bank or credit union if you can. You know, a Solaris Circle is a perfect group to help you get together with everybody else and share the job of getting references and checking it out. And if you feel inspired, you know, any local bank president who gets a call and says, look, I have a group of 12 people looking for a bank, I'm sure we'll be delighted to have you over in their conference room and make a presentation that will be fascinating about, you know, how their local bank works and who owns it and how it's run and what they do in their local community. So it's sort of a way that you can network and get other people. I know some of the circles in the areas that they're interested, they'll just call up leaders in their community and say, we want to learn more about this. Will you come make a presentation? And it's amazing who will come if you just, you know, say there are 12 of us and we want to learn more about this. And then finally, there's an investment track. So if you want to start investing together, but what I encourage a lot of people who aren't used to investing, I encourage them to do is in the education track, we have something where you can simulate investment. And I'll give you an example. I started my Solaris Circle in 2005, and everybody knew me, but we didn't all know each other. And so rather than start investing together, at first, we just simulated. We pretended that we were a family of four. We had $1 million in cash. We were homeless. And so the first thing we needed to do was to pick a place to live. And we decided that we wanted to stay in the country. And we decided that we we drafted criteria for, you know, sort of the perfect place. And we chose a place, a small town right outside of Asheville, North Carolina. And believe it or not, a year later, one of the members of the group who lived in Manhattan in New York City moved to that small town outside of Asheville, North Carolina. So, you know, it was a very, just the education of going through that. And then we started a portfolio and simulated it, and our simulated portfolio did better than all of our portfolios, and that's when we decided to start investing together. So
why was it that the simulated portfolio outperformed? Just because you were exchanging that much more information with each other?
The funny thing is we put our money where our heart was instead of what we thought was smart.
Oh, interesting.
And we had a lot more money in companies that were sort of working on real solutions. And during that period, it hasn't been lately, but during that period was a period when they did, you know, much better than we expected. And I think it indicated that, and I believe this is true, in the long run, I don't think for the next year, but in the long run, I think that is the area of equity investment and all investment which will do the best, which is why even now, Stephen, if that's not, you know, if the stock market is not a great place to be, you know, it takes a long time to learn where the real solutions are going to come from. And there's no better way to understand that than to look at the flow of energy in a household and in a small community and see, okay, what really makes a difference in the lives of children? What really makes a difference in the lives of small business and enterprise? What really makes a difference in the lives of, you know, transportation in a community? When you go through all the different parts of an ecosystem and you see what really reduces waste and brings change and gives joy to people, that's when you start to see, okay, well, here's where the great products and services are. Mm. So, and in fact, a couple of the companies we'd invested in during those periods were companies we found because we were trying to sort of improve the self-sufficiency of our home base, and we tried their product and service and then discovered that they were, you know, they were a company available for investment through a brokerage account.
Fascinating. So part of what I'm just seeing is that there's the Solaris circles that start to weave together these small, more intimate groups, and then there's also the more system level that you're working at with the financial permaculture, where you're saying, how do we create some systems in local economies like, you know, Green Incubator and you know, venture funds and that sort of thing.
Right. And it was so funny because
lots more of that activity.
One of the things, you know, whenever you're in a small town, everybody says, there's no money here. And, of course, I know there's plenty of money here because it's just all going to Wall Street. You know, there's a huge amount, even in a very poor community, of sort of retirement savings and other money. So what we did was, one of the things we did in the cross-cutting event is we had a simulation where we said, okay, 100 families, you know, this is just in the invention room. This is in our imagination. 100 families in Hohenwald have gotten together and agreed to invest $1,000 a month for 12 months each year for 3 years. So that's 36 months of $100,000 a month, right? Because 100 families at $1,000 a month, that's $100,000 a month. And they've also agreed to give $250 a month for 3 years. So that's $25,000 a month. And they're prepared to give the $25,000 a month and invest $100,000 a month in building up, you know, investment and you know, whether it's incubation or ethanol or whatever, in Hohenwald. So you have, it's over $4 million of philanthropic and venture investment in Hohenwald. Now, what is your criteria for investing this money, and what is your investment plan? So funny, because you had a whole bunch of the people in the audience who weren't used to having money, and all of a sudden they, you know, they couldn't use that as an excuse. So like, okay, well, what's a good investment? How do we make Hohenwald wonderful? And it was a very fun exercise. There was one, I was in my group, one person, there's a young, lovely young woman from Guy University named Ellie, who, if you go to financialpermaculture.org, you'll see some of her blogs. And just one of these amazing, I call them ninja turtles, amazing, young, collaborative, brilliant people. And somebody of my generation said, well, you know, we don't need money to do that. We can do that without money. And she looked at me and she said, yeah, sure, but why would you want to do it that way? Remind me, if I had a partner on Wall Street who used to say, speed costs money, how fast do you want to go? Anyway, but we just had so many amazing conversations where what we realized is, you know, if you've really studied, for example, you know, if you talk to Albert Bates, as somebody who was driving an ethanol car in the 80s, do you know what I mean? I mean, he's somebody who's tried many things, you know, just miraculous remediation and with bamboo and biochar and all these other things over at the farm. So when you see what Albert and the group at the EcoVillage Training Center have developed, and you think, okay, well, what if we had the money to do that on a very significant scale in a community like, you know, like Lewis County, rebuilding the topsoil and really, you know, building up the forests and all sorts of other things. It's incredible what you can imagine. So there's a, you know, there's nothing like just beginning.
Mm-hmm. So in a few minutes we'll open up for other questions from folks, but I just wanted to, maybe if you could distill out again, like some of the principles that are really at the core of the financial permaculture model, so that people can really crystallize those.
Okay, well, I'll pick one. We haven't gotten to our lessons learned yet, but I'll pick one that I'm going to propose, and that is that when we look at the systems around us, So when we understand the different systems that we're a part of, and if we will take the time to collaborate on finding new ways of aligning them, there is incredible wealth that can be created. And there are indeed ways of shifting the drain that is occurring in our communities now. So I would say that one of the principles which I would hope is will emerge is that there is tremendous currently sub-optimization, or there is tremendous opportunity to optimize the living systems and the financial systems on an integrated basis in our towns.
It's beautiful. And, yeah, it's, and then the actually, I'm just losing my train of thought there. So the principle.
Well, can I tell you about one more fabulous presentation?
Yeah.
What?
I was just saying, and what are some good principles that, that can take that, that core thesis and people can take the next step with it?
Well, I'll tell you, let me tell you about one other presentation, and I'll come back to what is emerging, I think, is the core, sort of the core principles.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie Landers, who's the this fantastic local leader I was telling you about, is her husband is a pastor at one of the local churches in Hohenwald. Is a community with 42 churches. I mean, this is a very serious, this is a very church community. And faith here is so important. And, in fact, I tried to persuade the sponsoring group that instead of calling, it's called Financial Permaculture, the Greening of a Rural American Community. I said we should call it the Greening of a Rural Christian Community, because part of what I was hoping would happen would be a conversation between the people who are Christians in the local leadership and then some of the people who came from other areas who are not Christians, to sort of talk about the role of faith in turning a community around. Anyway, so Debbie gave a presentation and on Saturday morning and talked about the importance of trust and respect as and within that of faith in bringing together these different worlds and in working together and collaborating. That was perhaps one of the most powerful presentations of the whole conference and resonated tremendously with people who I suspect, you know, probably said that they didn't like Christians. you know, and their introduction to Christians may have been Jerry Falwell or something like that. So I think that the principle that I saw come out of that was an understanding of the importance of really caring for each other. Debbie talked a lot about the principle of loving your neighbor as yourself and what that meant. And so I think what everyone really understands is the importance of character and ethics and a very high degree of trust and respect that protects each other from risk. So I would say the importance of character and ethics to anything successful.
So the local spiritual communities are really foundational for to be able to make this reality, because they're part of what have already been weaving these foundation of trust and respect and values that then you can take it the next step with the going into financial action and creating green economies around that.
Right. But it's almost as though, you know, Kipling had a great poem called the there was a line, I think it's called The Servant When It Raineth. You know, and money should be a servant. It's a tool that should serve, and you need a very strong ethical system and people of great character to make sure that that money serves rather than becomes the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so a system to successfully manage resources in a world where, you know, law and other systems are breaking down, you know, one of the points I made in Financial Ecosystem is financial ecosystems are man-made, which means the values are determined first and foremost by the rules and definitions which are man-made. And so essentially the thing that gives a financial system value is law. And if the law breaks down, the value breaks down as well, which is part of what we're seeing in the global financial system. And so what we're talking about from the bottom up is building a culture which is lawful. Not because those are the laws that Congress passed, but lawful because it has a culture that integrates those laws and those covenants that we make with each other into the very fabric of their being in society. And that has to be a society that's ruled by a purpose and by values as opposed to, you know, money or financial goals.
I like it. I like the way that all that threads together.
I used to have the head of the Confederate Museum in Washington was giving a speech. He was a wonderful friend of mine named John Edward Hurley, and he was giving a speech, and somebody said to him, you know, this is all stupid. Why should I care about Southern culture? And he looked at him with disdain, and he said, young man, culture is the integration of the divine into everyday life. Anyway, that's why, remember, I'm from Elvis country, Stephen. And, you know, there's a reason Elvis has had more hits in London than the Beatles. That's culture.
I think that's a great place to segue into questions from the audience. We'll segue from Elvis. So, Angela, can you set us up so that people can ask some questions of Catherine?
Hi, this is Sue in Los
Angeles. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
Fine.
I'm curious, could you, I don't understand the term green incubator.
Okay. An incubator is a business whose business is helping other businesses get started.
Gotcha.
So like kind of like a, you know, think of it as a business womb, so to speak. And an incubator can be virtual or physical. So we had a presentation, a wonderful presentation from Sylvia Palmer, from the Southeastern Development District here in Tennessee. And she told the story of Parsons, which is a little town in Tennessee, which had started a physical incubator. A lot of times you'll see a place, a town that has an empty building, for example, that the town owns, you know, say it's taken back in a default or a lien, tax lien. So it's got an empty building. It could be an industrial park. And somebody says, well, you know, why don't we use that to help businesses that can't afford their own space yet co-locate, and we can, sometimes they'll get a grant or the town will put in money. Sometimes they're done privately, but for by whatever reason, we'll basically create a shared back office. And so they have copying machines and they have computers and they have systems and whatever, and it's what I call sort of the business as a business. Some or part of the back office will be in the incubator, and depending on the terms and conditions, the new companies, oftentimes they'll have mentors that are available, say retired business people who live in the community who will help you write your business plan and then sort of guide you and mentor you, you know, during your early stages. And for some period of time you pay no rent or reduced rent, usually for in the Parsons incubator, I think it was 3 years, and then you're sort of expected to leave. And it's really a way of making it much easier for new entrepreneurs to learn about how to run a business and to make it much less expensive for them to kind of get going in the early years. And now that's a physical incubator. The Jonathan Clouds incubator is a virtual incubator where you're getting lots of support and sort of advice and counsel, but all of it's online. So you're not sharing a space with the incubator and the other businesses in the incubator. And so we looked at both virtual and physical. Hohenwald has a lot of empty real estate, which could be used to do an incubator, and I'm going to be interested to see if they do a virtual or a physical. But anyway, so that's an incubator is really a business of the business that helps businesses get going.
Thank you.
Oh, and a green incubator is one that focuses entirely on green businesses. If you go to my website, at one point I say meet the incubator team. I tried to introduce the different teams, and I think it links to Jonathan's website, and his is fascinating. And his website talks a little bit about some of the companies that they're incubating at Fairleigh Dickinson. The Sylvia Palmer's incubator was one that was sponsored by a town. Different universities may sponsor incubators, and so some of the universities focused on sustainability have focused on green or sustainability incubators.
Gotcha. Thank you so much. Yeah. You're very inspirational. I'm having a great time.
Well, you know, we're all so pumped up. I mean, I can't tell you what it's like to be with this much. These are people who spent their whole life figuring out one of the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, and now we're all just, like, putting them on the table and seeing the corner. You know, it's great when you get the four corners to connect.
Yeah, and I love that the farm is involved.
Oh, well, have you ever been to the farm?
I haven't, but they inspired me. I used to be a childbirth educator decades ago.
Uh-huh.
They were, you know, that was my book, Spiritual Midwifery.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't write it, but I was used it the all
the time. The folks, you know, they have a book publishing company.
Yes, yeah.
And I just had a big meeting with the folks at the book publishing company who are incredible.
Uh-huh.
And their books are fabulous. For those of you who are listening, thefarm.org, they have two websites, but thefarm.org is one of them, and we'll get you to everything else. I'll never forget, if you go to the farm, you know, it's 1,000-plus acres, and it's beautiful land. It's just beautiful. But if you go to the farm, they have a visitor center, because so many people come in, they have courses and different things.
Mm-hmm.
And in the visitor centers, you can get maps, and they'll have these pamphlets that show every, you know, for-profit and not-for-profit and ministry kind of thing they have going, because legally, technically, it's a church, and they have their ethical principles. It's not Christian, but anyway, so they have all these different ethical principles, but they show all the different things they're doing. So, you know, Katrina happens, and they send a team of people, and this happens, and they send a team of people, and, I mean, they're the hardest working people you can ever want to meet. Anyway, so I took one of these pamphlets that just described all the different things that the people at the farm were doing. And I took it over to Franklin Sanders, who's a wonderful precious metals dealer who I work with, who his farm and he and his family are farmers, and they're about an hour away from the farm. And, of course, he'd been told that all these guys were these wild hippies. And, you know, and so Franklin, sort of old-line conservative League of the South guy. And I take this pamphlet over to him, and he gives it to his wife, and he looks at me and he says, Susan, these people are better Christians than we are. So you have all these wild things happening because, you know, the divisions, the things that were supposed to keep us apart, they're just melting, and somehow people are deeply appreciating each other. It's wild to watch.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Can we get another question?
So, Catherine, this is Deva, Stephen's wife.
Hi, and Deva.
Hi there. As I've been listening to this, I'm just wondering how, for myself, but also for other people on the call, how everything you're talking about now with financial permaculture, how that's really, you know, especially relevant, or, you know, in the current economic situation, which is facing people. And I know, you know, as I've been talking with a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of just fear and how to deal with kind of basic things and their stocks and different things. But how do you see financial permaculture as playing a role in, you know, having people deal with what's in front of them right now in terms of...
Well, one of the best investments we can all make is to doing something that reduces our expenses. And a lot of times that depends on where you are. It could have to do with water. It could have to do with food. It could have to do with home building. It could have to do with... A lot of times it's energy. But a lot of the things we're looking at are very sort of basic and essential service. And what I would encourage folks, there's a group of video guys who are here making we hope is going to be a one-hour video, and we'll be able to put stuff up on the web. And we're also hoping in the DVD, it's going to be a DVD, that we'll be able to have the handouts and printouts. And I'm going to put a lot of materials up on the web as well. So we hope to really get everything that's happening here and we're learning up on the web. But what I would do is I would look at this and say, what is the one idea that I see here that I and my family and the people that I'm close to in my community could use, whether it's start a food co-op, or there's an idea you'll see up on the blog called Chamber Bucks, or, you know, for some communities, farming communities, ethanol and biodiesel are very relevant. But, you know, what you want to do is look for one idea that could reduce your expenses or make you and your family and your community a little bit more self-sufficient in a very practical way. And again, you've got to pick one that gives you energy, because what's, you know, what's energizing for one person in their situation is a complete waste of time for someone else. And there have been hundreds and hundreds of ideas that have come out here. You know, when we talked about circles, we talked about saving clubs. We had a great discussion about the church. And for those of you who have not seen the documentary Maxed Out, there's a great description that's also, you can get some articles up on the web about a church that literally went around their congregation and would counsel different families who were in debt, and then the whole church would tithe and get them out of debt. And, you know, we talked about different ways that the churches here work to help people get jobs or get out of debt or trade, you know, literally do sort of bartering and trading within the church to make sure that everybody has everything that they need, including some days after they take in the collection, just saying, okay, anybody in the church who needs money, you know, just take it out of the collection tray. So there are hundreds and hundreds of ideas, but pick up that one that could be of interest. And I think the locallygrown.net and then Bob Waldrop's food co-op is a no-brainer for many communities that haven't done that. Now, I know a lot of your members are out in California, and California is so smart about food that, you know, that...
Are you planning a workshop out here in California, or might we convince you to?
Well, one of the things we've talked about this, you know, we had no business doing this conference. See, the people at the farm are very fearless. They're, you know, they just move forward. They just say, look, you know, we're at the crossroads. We got to get everybody together and figure this out. It doesn't matter if we have no business doing this. We're just going to do it anyway. So they're really, you know, they're fearless, and they just do it. But so you have a lot of people who've just worked, you know, round the clock to pull this off. So I think what we're going to do is take a breather. We know we want to do another one in September next year here in Hohenwald. But a couple of the communities here, there's a fabulous group of guys from Sandpoint, Idaho. So we've all just sort of committed that we must go to Sandpoint, Idaho. But there's absolutely no doubt we want to take this on the road and connect up with lots of different communities. Because one of the things you'll see when you see the different economic issues is that communities can't do this alone. We need to be networked. So there's some resources that we need to share. There's some things we can just all, you know, sort of do self-sufficiently, but there's a lot of knowledge and networking we need to do between communities. So it's kind of relational. You need to go deep in your community, but we need to be networked throughout community. So, yeah, we'd love to kind of do the financial permaculture Chautauqua and take this on the road, but exactly how or what we're going to do that, we have no idea yet.
Hmm. Be great.
So that's, as the permaculturists would say, that's an opportunity.
Just saying, it would be great to have a whole financial permaculture toolkit with all the different pieces that have been identified. And
Yeah, no, we're definitely thinking about that. As we're putting, as the four corners get snapped in on the jigsaw, we're saying, now we could do a kit and, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Exciting. Great. How about we get to another question or comment?
This is George.
Hi, George.
Hi, Catherine. Did I hear you say there are two kinds of incubators, one concrete and one virtual?
Yeah, so one that shares a physical space and one that's just virtual.
Could some of them be both instead
yes.
of having to be either? Okay,
yes.
That's the
Absolutely.
End of that question.
Absolutely.
Good.
Okay, well, since that was a quick question, we certainly have time for another.
This is Joy from Chicago.
Hi, Joy.
I'm just wondering, as you're talking about taking this on the road and getting the information to more and more people, are there any plans being developed to get this information to the whoever wins the election next week?
Well, I think the first thing we want to do is we want to get everything up on the blog. So we've been blogging as we go, And the Gaia universities have been students have been documenting everything, and they and the presenters, what we haven't gotten up on the blogs yet, we're certainly going to try and get it up the next week. We also, we've got the video guys who are making this DVD, and they want to put some of it up on the YouTube and get a DVD with all the handouts that people can get. So we want to make sure that everything that's gone on and everything that's happened is out there. We also have had really an absolutely world-class photographer, Susan Johann, incredible sort of New York photographer. She's in all the top sort of museums. She's in the Smithsonian for her playwright collection. Anyway, she's been here and done over 1,000 photographs of all the different people, all the different sessions, and she's uploading all 1,000 photographs to the Gaia University students. So hopefully shortly on our blogs you'll start to really see all the different people and the, you know, the passion and the intensity of the different conversations. So first we're just going to try and get it out everywhere so that networks can take and run with it. And one of the next steps we've asked the teams to come up with is, you know, can you go back to your communities and teach this and connect it to other people? And so we're very focused on how we can spread it virally as quickly as possible. We're assuming from that the next administration can pick up on it. I mean, it will certainly be as open and as accessible as possible. We haven't spoken that much about it because what I try, and maybe it's, you know, I really impressed in my first speech the importance of communities by their actions in pushing the red button, creating options, because the danger right now is the next president of the United States will walk into the Oval Office and will be in a financial prison, because everybody in America is going to want their check, and to get their check, they're going to have to do whatever the bankers and the powers that be tell them. And so our focus has been not on helping the administration, but giving options to the next administration to not have to be so dependent on the centralized financial powers.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential to really bring together the best solutions and then offer that as a strategy that can be disseminated at a national level.
Right. Well, it's funny because at night, you know, I come home and I try and do a couple of minutes. I've been helping with the Scoop. Scoop Media has a fantastic campaign for U.S. Electronic election integrity, which I really recommend. You can pick it up from our blog if you just do a Scoop search, and it's an incredible effort. They're putting together all sorts of stuff to really promote. And I guess my big focus and prayer for the campaign is I truly hope that whoever the American people vote for is who becomes the president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Amen to that.
Thing I want to add about this, you know, getting all of this wonderful information to the next president, I heard something today about the two guys, young guys, who are working on Obama's electronic communications in terms of social networking and all that.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember now the name of their company, but that I can find out and maybe try and email that to you. But that might be, you know, if anybody has any way to communicate with them, that might be a good connection there to get, you know, some of the blogging and YouTube and kind of stuff to get that into their hands.
We have on the blog, we have a place for financial permaculture. If you don't know where you wanted to put your financial permaculture comment, you know, it's just for comments. So is it something you could post there?
Sure.
Okay, that would be fantastic. And I will make sure that we do everything we can to get it to them.
Okay.
Well, Catherine, I know you, we have to be respectful of your time because you've got to be back up at 8 a.m. with the with the workshop. Put you through your paces there.
That's right. The permaculturalists work you hard.
Inspiring. And I look forward to talking more about ways to collaborate on this because, you know, with our network and we're also...
That would be fantastic.
It's trying to pull together really innovative evolutionary solutions that we can submit into the next administration.
Well, since we haven't invented it yet, then clearly we need you to help us invent it.
Sounds like it's a very full-scale team effort. So appreciate appreciate it. And next week, we'll look forward to continuing this series with you. And
have a wonderful evening.
Thanks so much, Catherine. And folks, we can leave the lines open if people want to do some community discussion time. I think Angela was going to stick around if people wanted that.
We hope you enjoyed this offering from the Shift in Action Partners program and would like to sample more. Partners of the Institute of Noetic Sciences gain access to a weekly stream of inspiration, wisdom, media, and spirited exchange. The program includes live weekly teleseminars with visionaries who are lighting the way forward: Marilyn Schlitz, Dean Radin, Belvy Rooks, Larry Dossey, Candace Pert, Brian Swim, and many more. Our live teleseminars are then added to an extensive archive of audio and video on our website at www.shiftinaction.com, with new offerings each week from teachers like Marianne Williamson, Edgar Mitchell, and Louisa Tisch. The site offers the latest in community building software that allows you to engage every piece of content as a focal point for education, exchange, and action. Join us in exploring the frontiers of consciousness.